Hello, you're listening to Romeo and a podcast about masculinity, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society. Today, I'm your host, Street Saint. A few weeks ago, MTV held its annual Video Music Awards to celebrate and honor all of the best music videos produced this year. But mainly, it's a time to celebrate pop culture and give young adults material to make memes about. This year, MTV made the controversial choice to contract Miley Cyrus as the VMA's host. A lot of people weren't too happy with the decision. Because just 2 years ago at the VMAs, Miley was red-lighted by the media, the feminists, the general public, and just about everyone for her, well, eyesore of a performance with Robin Thicke. It was racist, it was insensitive, it was overtly sexual, and frankly, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. Let's circle back in time a moment and see how we got here. We all know Miley Cyrus as the breakout Disney star of Hannah Montana. To say that the show was a huge success is a pretty big understatement. Miley Cyrus was basically the voice of her generation. Every young girl knew her name and envied her success. But then, we've seen this before. We often call it the curse of child stars, because growing up in the spotlight can damage your self-image and personality. It can warp your views on the world. Countless stars who found fame as children are often said to have gone crazy as they grew into adulthood. Michael Jackson, Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan, Gary Coleman, Amanda Bynes, Justin Bieber, Shia LaBeouf. The list goes on and on. It seems as though having so much success at such a young age can spoil you in a sense. To the point that you can no longer relate to the rest of the world, and you seek drugs and alcohol for solace. Or you put on an eccentric public persona to draw attention to yourself. Miley Cyrus was just another child star doomed to tumble down this road into crazy town. And in 2012, after a very public announcement that she and Liam Hemsworth had broken off their year-long engagement, Miley chopped off her iconic long brown locks and took all of her clothes off forever. People say that it's innocence that dooms child stars. We see them as these sweet, adorable kids for so long, and it's hard for us to come to terms with the fact that they've grown up, and they're in relationships now, and they're drinking, and they're having sex. And the backlash they get from living their lives forces them to either try and conform to this idea of perfection we have for them, or hermit themselves away from the public eye, or embrace the criticism and just do whatever the hell they want. Miley decided that she would pick option number 3. And so in 2013, when she performed at the VMAs, Miley came out wearing very little and dancing sexually with her tongue out, twerking and grinding on just about everyone on stage. She slapped a big black woman's ass, and of course, she rubbed her own ass on Robin Thicke's crotch. Robin Thicke, who himself was notorious for writing the most rapey song that year, which also happened to be one of the most popular songs that year, which also happened to be the same song that he and Miley were singing whilst all the crotch grinding was taking place. And this was the first time a lot of us had seen Miley since her Hannah Montana days, with her long hair and the girl next door, all-American look and style. And so everything that could have possibly been criticized about the performance was. And for good reason. And that brings us back to the present day. Miley Cyrus returns to the VMA stage yet again, although this time to host the show. Naturally, she was once again picked apart for everything she did. And this is the point in the show where I'm supposed to tell you about how awful her performance was, and how skimpy her costumes were, and how terrible she is as a person. And in previous times, I might have done exactly that. But listening to Miley talk about herself and her choices has actually made me reconsider my position on her. Because here's the thing. We talk about feminism as women being empowered. As much as I hate to say it, this is exactly what Miley Cyrus represents. An empowered woman. She's in control of her sexuality. She can wear whatever the hell she wants. She can say whatever the hell she wants. It's her party, she can do what she wants to. And so, as her once best friend Leslie used to say, she's just being Miley. But in all seriousness, we do have to take a look at ourselves and how we think about and criticize people in the public eye. I think it's fine to speculate about people, but it's another to openly condemn them. And I don't say this as some white knight goody-two-shoes. I'll be the first to admit that I'm guilty of it myself. In fact, I actually did admit it, but a minute ago, when I said that in the past, I would have criticized Miley for her behavior. I don't expect everyone to be perfect. I just hope you all remain conscious and, you know, do your best. Miley Cyrus gets naked and shows off her body all the time, and we've kind of expected it of her at this point. And she talks a lot about the Free Them Nipple campaign, which is a cause that I totally support. And how are we going to allow women to bare their breasts without desensitizing ourselves to the idea? And this is not to say that I totally support Miley 100%. I still think her 2013 VMA performance with Robin Thicke was a train wreck. And I'm not even a particularly big fan of her music, although she does have a few songs that I can't help but jam to. Not Wrecking Ball. Not a big fan of that song. But anyway, you can agree with someone on certain things and disagree with them on others. You can even agree on the same idea and have drastically oppositional views on how to achieve that idea. That's also fine. But I'm done criticizing women for dressing slutty. As long as it is your choice to do so, I'm in no position to put you down for it. Although it is true that a lot of women feel they don't have many other options besides selling their body and their sexuality, but that's another discussion for another day. Today on the podcast, we're going to take another look at the conversation I had last week and highlight some of the points that we raised. Lots to talk about, so stay tuned. That's coming up next here on Romeo and. If you missed the last episode of the podcast, I encourage you to skip back and take a listen. I had a great little discussion with my guest Val, who shared her experiences as a bi woman asking out and dating both men and women. In this episode, I'm going to take another look at that conversation and highlight some of the takeaways from the whole thing. Val contacted me after listening to the elementary school romance episodes, where I talked about being too afraid to ask out my crushes. And I had always thought that this was a uniquely male problem. However, it's something that everyone experiences. Well, most people anyway. Male, female, gay, straight, bi, or anything in between, when you see or meet someone you're attracted to, you're most likely going to feel some anxiety. It's just like meeting a celebrity or a role model of yours. You naturally feel nervous because you don't want to do or say anything that will make the person dislike you. And so straight guys get super nervous when they try to ask out women they really like, understandably so, because they don't want to get turned down. And when I encourage straight women to ask out men, they usually give some kind of excuse as to why they won't or they shouldn't. guys get weirded out if you ask them on dates, and guys might see that as a sign that you're easy or something, or they may take it as consent for them to sexually assault you. And speaking from male privilege, I always thought this was ridiculous, and that women just didn't want to ask out guys because when the shoe's on the other foot, they see that it's too stressful and they don't want to give up the privilege that they have to be sought after. And that may be true to some extent, but over time I've learned that women probably know more about their own situation than I do. Because the fact of the matter is, guys are unpredictable, and I've heard some stories of men actually freaking out when approached by women. I've heard a story about a guy who actually punched out some girl for asking him out or complimenting him or something stupid. I've heard of guys taking advantage of women and sexually abusing them, thinking they could get away with it. Lots of terrible, horrible things. In Val's story, she asks out a guy and he flakes out. And he tells all of his friends about her, and then her whole class ends up targeting her and doing terrible, awful things to her. I kind of glossed over it when I was actually talking to Val, but it sounded pretty awful what these people did. Scratching slurs into her car and all kinds of messed up things. All because they saw her as some kind of nonconformist challenging the gender laws. And I absolutely don't want to take away from these stories because, like I said, they are terrible. But when I thought about it again, this kind of abuse is, it's not entirely uncommon to guys either. Guys experience all these things too. I mean, more likely than anything else, if somebody gets asked out, be it a man or a woman, they may feel a little bit weirded out. And I think it's rare that a person feels so compelled to ruin the life of someone who genuinely thought they were attractive, but it does happen. Although when we share these stories about women who were attacked by the men they approach, we often forget that men go through these same hellish experiences. Why do you think guys get so nervous about asking women out? Because we hear these same terrible, horrible stories, except not when they're happening to women, but when they're happening to men. Again, I can't comment on the frequency or likelihood that it will happen, but guys also get shot down by the women they ask out. And sometimes they're physically attacked by those women. And sometimes those women tell their friends about this guy, and now he's harassed by an entire community of people. That's just the risk you take when you get into the dating game. Which is why I gave it up for a long time. And this is something that men's rights activists bring up a lot. The fact that men are the targets of violence. More so than women, according to a lot of research. But no one likes to talk about it because no one wants to see men as victims of anything. Especially men. If a guy is harassed or abused or violated by a woman, he's generally gonna shut up about it and pretend it never happened. Instead of talking to someone about it, as I've been saying for a while now, he might just take his own life if it gets to the point that he can't deal with it anymore. And so, it would be pretty evil of me to encourage women to join this war zone that men have to suffer all the time, and that's why I'm fighting for an alternative. Like I said in the interview with Val, I don't like to compare people's struggles. A day in the life of a woman is hard, and there's a lot of crap that women have to do and deal with that men can't possibly understand. But how can you say that the same is not true for men? Men have all kinds of crap that they have to navigate in life too. And I don't think it's fair to say that anyone has it better or worse than anyone else. It's just different. Instead of trying to compare apples to oranges, we should just be saying, hey, these things suck. Let's try to make them better. In my perfect little idea of a world, feminists would be fighting for a better life for women, and men's rights activists would be fighting for a better life for men. And instead of getting in each other's way, they would be helping each other. because that's the only logical thing to do. That's the only thing that makes sense. Well, I guess if this is my perfect little idea of a world, we wouldn't have to be fighting for equality in the first place, but, you know, whatever. So, let's circle back and talk about privilege again. I said on the podcast that women have the privilege of sitting around and just waiting for Prince Charming to come and rescue them. And I admit that it was pretty unfair of me to say. Because in this system, women have no choice. I said that women could choose between all of their potential suitors, but it's not like every guy you might want to date knocks on your door and competes for your affection. Maybe you're waiting around for months or even years and no one says anything to you. That's gotta suck. But then maybe two or three or four guys are all hitting on you at once. And even if you manage to choose which one you like the most, now you have to find a way to tell the others off without them throwing a fit and calling you a whore. To me, the grass was a lot greener for women. But that's just because being more passive suits my personality. I like to wait around and see what comes along. But as a guy, if you're waiting around, it's torture. You're just watching opportunity after opportunity pass you by, and you know in your head that because you're a guy, nothing will happen unless you take action. And maybe that's the same for some women, I can't say. Val did mention that she felt the same as I did, except the other way around. She thought it was a privilege for men to be able to choose who they want to date and approach, rather than just waiting around for someone who you may not even like. Again, the grass is always greener. All this says to me is that as much as I talk about male privilege and everything, I still sometimes forget that I still have my man goggles on. Sometimes even I forget all the things I'm taking advantage of. And the moral of the story is, everything sucks and there's no getting around it. No, I'm kidding. At least I hope not. But speaking of putting my male privilege goggles away, at one point, Val asked me if I had ever been asked out by a woman. And to be fair, no woman has ever actually asked me out on a date, no. However, I did have a kind of horrible back and forth with a girl in high school. And since it's come up, I probably will share the whole thing in the next story episode of the podcast. But this whole talk of who has it better, men or women, got me thinking of how I feel about sales jobs. I always say that if I ruled the world, I would make it a law that everyone has to spend at least a good 6 months working in a customer service position. Because you learn some valuable lessons about dealing with people. You see the darkness of the human soul. Some people feel so entitled that they think they can treat you like garbage just because the customer is always right. Which is bullcrap, by the way. The customer is not always right. And if you've ever worked a sales job in your life, you would know that. But in any case, I think I would enact the same law about dating. It should be required that you have to ask at least two people on a date before you can accept an unsolicited date. Or something, I don't know. But you have to be on both sides. You learn a lot as a guy being asked out by a woman, and you learn a lot as a woman trying to ask out a man. And in that learning process, you can better respect the people you approach and the people who approach you in the future. So if you haven't already, I encourage you to try being on the other side of things. Although, if you're a person who generally is doing all the asking, like a guy, then there's really no way to encourage unsolicited dates. I know this because if there was a method, I would have been doing it for years now. But before I end, I did want to bring up one last thing that Val and I touched on in our conversation. I asked a question of who has the power in a relationship at one point. If one person has power over the other, generally the relationship doesn't work out. And I don't mean power as in, who is dominant and who is submissive. Some of the most stable and loving relationships you can find in the BDSM community, where one partner plays the role of master and the other plays the role of slave. But the only reason that works is because both parties consent and agree to the positions within the relationship. Even as a sub, you can recognize your place and understand that if you feel you're not being fulfilled by the partnership, then you're free to leave. Things get problematic when one person is calling all the shots and the other can't do or say anything about it, even if they would really like to. Because here's the thing about power. I like to talk about power the same way scientists talk about energy and mass. The scientific law of conservation of energy states that the amount of energy in an isolated system remains constant. In other words, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only shift from one source to the other or change forms. I think of power as a type of energy. Everyone has some amount of power, but the amount of power you have is relative to who you're with.
Vegeta, what does the scouter say about his power level?
It's over 9,000!
Sorry, I should have prefaced that with, and now for something completely different. But yeah, you can't just develop power for yourself in a vacuum, or a hyperbolic time chamber for that matter. Last Dragon Ball Z reference, I promise. And if you look at this analogy, then you can take fear and respect as ways of transferring your own power to someone else. If you really envy someone, or you respect them, or you fear them, then it means that you're donating your power to them. And if a person has more power than you, then their opinions and decisions just hold more weight than yours do. And so when we look at relationships, if you see a person you're really attracted to, you might feel super anxious about approaching him or her. Maybe you're afraid that they'll reject you. Or maybe you think that they're out of your league. Once you start thinking these thoughts, you essentially give away your power to this person for free. And now they're in control of the situation. And it's generally pretty easy to tell when you have more power over someone else, through their body language or other nonverbal, and sometimes verbal cues too. But then this transfer of power can happen the other way as well. If someone is approaching you and asks you on a date, and you see this person as so dreamy and attractive or whatever, then you give up your power to them just the same. So the person being asked can give their power to the asker and vice versa. Which is why Val and I concluded in our conversation that it really isn't a matter of men have it easier than women or women have it easier than men. Both sides can struggle just as much as the other. What you need to do is find someone who can share that same amount of power as you have. And it may fluctuate. Maybe it starts out one person is more powerful than the other, and then it swaps back and forth. That's fine too. What is problematic is when one person is just completely overwhelmed. It might be the case that it's too much of a power difference to actually reconcile in the course of your relationship. And that's what people really mean when they say someone is out of your league. And so, my request of you is not to live in fear. Because fear is simply power leaving your body. It's like that quote that you see in the gym all the time. I'm trying to remember it. I think it's like pain is weakness leaving your body or something like that. In any case, remember that the more anxious you are about dating, the harder it's going to be to find someone who will share that power dynamic with you. And I don't say that to scare you. I say that to encourage you. Because you can overcome those fears to a certain extent. I've come a long way myself, and considering where I started, if I can do it, you absolutely can too. Additionally, if you are a straight woman, or any kind of person who generally dresses themselves up to solicit unsolicited dates. Anyway, maybe try changing things up once or twice. Approach a guy, just, you know, to see what happens. Naturally, use your best judgment, but I think it's extremely valuable to get a glimpse of the other side of things. And if you do end up doing it, tell me what happened! Seriously, I really want to know how it goes for you. And maybe it will be your story I end up talking about on the show. But that's it for this episode of Romeo And. As always, if you have a story that you want featured on this podcast, send me a message. It's contact@stsaint.com or give me a call at 516-514-7878. Also, be sure to follow me on social media, like Romeo And on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter @street_saint. New episodes of Romeo And are published weekly, so make sure you get every episode when it's released by subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcatcher of your choice. But if you do nothing else, just go to iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a 5-star rating. There's nothing more valuable to the show than getting a bunch of good ratings from all of you guys. But thanks again for listening. I am Street Saint, and I'll see you next time.